We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That guy over there is the one and only Dan Rubenstein in the heart of the Midwest, Chicago, Illinois. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. Every time you say that, you make me sound like, when you say heartland, like I'm at bed at dusk, I'm waking up at dawn, I'm taking the pickup for a harvest, like a very stereotypical, not at all true for the Midwest or for me. And right. I don't know why the word heartland does that for me, but I'm happy all the same to be a part of it.
Welcome back to the show, one and all. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening. If you like the show but haven't subscribed yet, you can do so by going out to our website, solidverbal.com, or really anywhere you can find a podcast. You can type in the Solid Verbal and find our show. We broadcast 3 days a week. And now we've got a Patreon, which you can find at verballers.com. Many of you who are listening to the show are finding it on a Monday morning. Typically, this show will be on a Sunday. We push that back a little bit based on when most of the people listen to our show. However, if you are one of those who are kind of a creature of habit, and you just need to get the show early, we're still able to do that if you go on out to the Patreon. Again, verballers.com. You can sign up there. You get your own private RSS feed, and you can download the show a little bit early, as well as a bunch of other perks. We've been just overjoyed with the amount of response that we've gotten thus far since launching this thing, last Wednesday. Yeah. And had a chance to talk with some folks on the Discord channel, not just typing, but also talking, kind of a Solid Verbal coaches conference, if you will, last night before the Alabama and Georgia game. So a lot of fun to be had on there thus far. I think we're really enjoying it, and would urge many, many more folks to check it out and see what you're missing out on.
Yeah, we're also going to keep recording, even after we hit Solid Verbal and Peace at the end of this show, we're going to keep recording the Bruin-A, which is exclusive for Patreon subscribers, certified premium verballers. There's certified verballers, premium verballers, and the unlisted benefactor verballer, which if you're interested and you are stupid wealthy.
This has been the running joke on the Slack channel, hasn't it?
the benefactor verballer, yeah.
Benefactor verballer tier, yeah.
Yes. Otherwise, yeah, and we're going to answer a bunch of questions, and I think we'll put like a question on YouTube that we answer, but we're going to answer a few, and the full Bruin-A is exclusive to Patreon subscribers, which you can, of course, find at verballers.com. Ty, would you like to get into things?
Let's start where we always start. Let's start with those week 7 reverbs. Again, here's the way it works. If you're a new listener, people call in at 408-VERBAL-1, 408-837-2251 throughout the course of a Saturday. And we get stream of consciousness, real-time reaction to what folks are thinking as these games are transpiring. We get dozens, if not hundreds, of calls every week. Our boy Ryan cuts them up into about 3.5-4 minutes. It's one of our favorite, one of your favorite segments that we do the entire year through. So let's have a listen to week 7.
Hi, it's Pete from Cumberland. Georgia Tech had this coming for a long time.
Hey, this is Anthony from Australia.
Hey guys, it's Lindsay from Louisville.
Dan, Ty, this is Evan in Duke Country. 39 days until basketball.
Hey, Dan, Ty, Jason in Salt Lake City.
Ty, Dan, it's Squishy again.
Hey guys, it's Nathan in Indiana.
Hey, this is Red from Texas.
Hey, this is Ryan in Africa, now in San Diego.
How you doing, Ty and Dan? This is JT from Tuscaloosa.
Hey, Dan and Ty, it's Christina, the Bama fan in Athens, Georgia. So I called my grandmother, who's in a nursing home. And apparently during the game, the staff ran in to check on her twice because she screamed. They thought she was injured, but she was just yelling at the TV.
I would like to petition. Georgia only plays one half of football specifically against Alabama for the rest of time.
I was a little frustrated when all my packages wound up at my neighbor's house. Then I realized that's just what the mailman's doing today. Roll Tide.
Is it possible that Bama, Georgia, has turned into a crock pudding?
I want you to park that big Mac Jones right in this little garage, baby. Roll Tide.
It should have been SEC interception Saturday.
If you're a Tennessee fan, the rest of the season is a window of opportunity.
Terry Wilson has now beaten Florida and Tennessee on the road. He's the first Kentucky quarterback to do that in close to 40 years. Go Cats.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Ty. I'm just sitting out here enjoying a campfire in like 60-degree weather here in Stillwater, Oklahoma. My Pokes have went 2 straight bye weeks and are going to be a top 5 team now. Thank you, Irish, and thank you, Tar Heels.
Georgia Tech fan here. Just tell me it's going to be okay.
In 1903, Georgia Tech lost 73-0 to Clemson, which resulted in them hiring John Heisman away from Clemson. Should I be worried about Dabo?
Can't believe that Syracuse lost to Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Got a little joke for you this week. A running back walks into a bar. Oh, never mind. That was just Beefy's end zone. Khalil Herbert giving me nightmares.
Can we just not talk about Auburn this week? Thanks.
Okay, I don't know. War Eagle, I guess. But it's just, if things don't change, man, this is not. After a team that won an SEC title in 2013, a team that's contended and has been a contender, has been a playoff game, has been a contender, won a national title, has been relevant the past 10 years, things got to change.
Sam Pittman making football fun again in the Barry Odom no-fly zone. Woo pig.
First SEC home victory for the Hogs since 14. Woo pig suey.
Remember the coaching carousel last winter and how the media raved about the Lane train pulling into Oxford and Mike Leach landing in Starkville and how everyone scratched their heads about Arkansas hiring Sam Pittman? Well, it's October 18th, my 35th birthday, by the way, and Coach Pitt is 2-0 against the brand-new SEC coaching prima donnas.
I gotta say that Matt Corral might be the best quarterback that Arkansas has had in the past decade.
Congratulations, Coach Sam Pittman. You are now Coach Sam Pittmaster.
Woo! Go Noles, man. Oh, man, it's been so long since he's had any sort of hope. But, man, this feels really, really good.
Is the Florida State-North Carolina game the first Instapotting?
Ooh. Instapotting, Dan. Instapotting. Okay.
I mean, that first half.
Thank you to one and all for calling in. Again, it's 408-VERBAL-1. Reverb line opens as the action starts on a given college football weekend. You mentioned the Patreon earlier. We're also doing a pre-verbs thing with you can check out. Excuse me, if you go on over to, again, verballers.com. So we called it Select Your Gourd Saturday.
Yeah.
Which is a great name. Still not entirely sure what it means. I think you did a good job spinning it, giving it some definition.
Would you say the Alabama secondary ended up squashing Stetson Bennett?
There was a little bit of a smashing pumpkins element to it.
We're very bad at what we do.
Yeah. I was going to say, what was your gourd this Saturday? I don't really know if there's an answer to that. What were your takeaways from watching week 7? Because like for me,
Right.
Just in going back through, especially this morning, as we often do, and try to recap it and put it on our little Google Docs here and figure out what we're going to say. First off, there were fewer games because of all the postponements. We had six postponements, around college football. And it felt like, at least this morning, had more of a chance to dive back into many of these games that I watched. Just had more time to do so, which I appreciate as somebody who has to rifle through all these games on a Sunday morning. You know, there obviously the Alabama-Georgia game was the headliner, and we're going to talk about that one first. There were some other games in the SEC that were notable because there were upsets, and of course we had the Florida State victory as well. But I felt like in pretty much every game that we're going to cover, I learned something. It wasn't always like a sexy lesson learned, but I felt like I learned something in pretty much all of these games, and that's not always the case.
I feel like I should download for these moments the end music of Full House when Danny Tanner takes a knee and tells Stephanie or DJ or Michelle, like, look, it's not always going to turn out the way you want. But the important thing is we're family and we learn something. I'll find that music. Or if somebody can find that music and send it to us, that's even easier. We'll steal it. We will steal it. I learned something. I think it's very difficult to come away with a theme for all sorts of games and results and the way those results happen. But I will say, if there is anything I can take away from Week 7 and Select Your Gourd Saturday, it is that distance was further established in the hierarchy of these conferences.
Yeah.
That to me, you know, whether it's North Carolina coming up short when they finally ascended to a quote unquote top five position because it's 2020 and conferences playing and not playing sort of changed the way we look at rankings. But if it's North Carolina not being there, if it's Notre Dame not looking all of a sudden like they are anywhere near a top tier in the ACC, whether it's Georgia looking like they have the defense to be equals with Alabama, I think in a very select way, because we did have a lot of big action, I think that distance was further established.
The space between, as one Dave Matthews once said.
I was actually trying to think of that song as I was saying that. And this is why we do what
this
we
is,
do, Ty.
This is the mind meld is what this is. Mm-hmm. Let's start in the SEC. I mentioned the postponements. So we had both the LSU-Florida games as well as the Vandy-Mizzou game postponed. And the headliner was obviously Alabama against Georgia. So first things first here, Nick Saban was back on the sidelines after apparently a couple of negative tests. You'll remember.
Three of them.
Yeah, he tested positive earlier in the week. Thankfully, he was asymptomatic, got a couple negative tests, so he was cleared to resume coaching, something that obviously Sir Nick did enthusiastically. Your final score here was 41-24 in favor of Alabama. Georgia led at half, 24-20, but was shut out in the second half. They gave up 21 unanswered. And time and again, it's the story of second half adjustments for Alabama. We've seen that throughout the entire tenure of Saban.
Right.
Saw it again last night. It seemed like it took the defense, particularly the linebackers, a little bit of time to find their way in this game for Alabama. After they did that, especially in the second half, they were able to shut down Georgia. And that was what gave them that space between to sort of rise up here and end up winning this one by a 41-24 final score. Again, there are like 100 different things that we could talk about here.
Okay, let's do 37 of them.
The one that stood out to me was Mac Jones and how good he looks for Alabama. Like, I get it. I know there are built-in advantages to playing quarterback at Alabama. You've got the line in front of you pretty much all the time. You've got a couple beast running backs and game-breaking wide receivers aplenty.
Mm-hmm.
But to do what Mac Jones did against a really good, potentially the best defense in the country on the other side for Georgia, you got to be really good. His final line was 417 and four touchdowns. He had a tipped interception on his first pass of the game. I just kept thinking that Bama's receivers got to love this guy because he's not afraid to throw downfield. He's not afraid to wing it downfield. And furthermore, he seems more than willing to put the ball in a place where his receivers can make plays.
Yeah.
He gives them an opportunity to go out and make themselves look good. And so if you're a receiver, you're Devontae Smith, you love this guy. He puts the ball in your vicinity. You can go up, you can make a play.
What a blessed tenure Devontae Smith has had quarterback-wise and offensive coordinator-wise at Alabama. What a blessed, like, you see all these receivers and, you know, like, look at Larry Fitzgerald in the NFL, whatever, just cursed with, what a blessed time.
No, he's been living a pretty good life down there. So, I don't know, I just, that struck me in this game, especially going up against a really good, again, Georgia defense. And then when you layer on the Bama running game, I'm just not sure how you stop the offense. I think the Ole Miss approach of just screw it on defense, try to outscore them is the only thing that's going to get it done at this point. Because if they are firing on all cylinders against this level of a defense, I mean, what's the answer to that, Dan? I don't know if there is one.
The only answer is confusion, because Georgia's talent level and their ability to execute and tackle in space and generally cover receivers. We saw that fall down on the long, probably the dagger, the Jalen Waddle, I think it was a 90-yard touchdown.
90-yarder,
sort of the crossing, they crossed up wheelie. I don't know what the route is called, but you know what I'm talking about.
The wheel route.
It was sort of a wheel route, but he didn't come out of the backfield. So I don't know if it's technically, you know, where the receivers cross up each other and try to confuse the corners. In any case, you're right. Mac Jones is not a replacement level quarterback. You actually have to make the throws and make them accurately under a lot of scrutiny, under a lot of pressure for Alabama. Yes, your line is incredible. Yes, you have the receivers. You actually have to make the throws. I give Sark a lot of credit for organizing and executing a game plan really, really well. And he has been. I think they're paying $2.5 million.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that luxury that when you discover somebody who really works out for you at offensive coordinator, that you can just keep paying him more to keep him from taking other jobs. So Alabama's in a fantastic place. As for Georgia, I think there was a slight assist from, I guess, Todd Monken. Georgia was running the ball really well. The strength of the Alabama front is rushing the passer. We saw a lot of, you know, as the game wore down, it was the sort of same story for the Alabama edge rushers and the Georgia tackles, that they were getting the best of them. When Georgia was running straight at Alabama, they had a ton of success. Whether it was Zamir White, Kendall Milton, the freshman, and James Cook, who was also great in an all-purpose role, taking the ball out of Stetson Bennett's hands, shocker, actually worked pretty well for Georgia, but they fell into that panic that I think we all do even when we play video games. You fall down 10 points, you're like, oh my God, I need to get back on the board as quick as possible. And the patience that Georgia didn't show, I think, helped to define the second half. But even then, I think you can only do so much when Alabama can score that quickly. I thought Alabama's corners were actually exceptional. And we didn't hear George Pickens' name all that often, did we?
No. No.
I thought Alabama's corners might be the best players on that defense. They're outside corners. And when Georgia was able to get loose on that James Cook wheel route, that was on a linebacker. So I think Alabama's defense is improving. The linebackers still leave a little bit to be desired for sure. And Georgia on offense, Stetson Bennett he's maximized his ability. He's a really good story. You need more than Cherith Cute's story, Ty, to beat Alabama. And to beat Alabama scoring 40 plus points, no matter how many star receivers, no matter how good your offensive line is, you need a killer at quarterback to hang with Alabama. Matt Corral was that week, but he's certainly, and we will get into it, not that quarterback every week. And so that's the type of quarterback that is needed. And whether it was Swag Kelly or Dr. Bo, they were that quarterback that week against Alabama as well. And Stetson Bennett wasn't. And so I know Georgia fans are upset about officials over ticky-tack penalties and the clock situation near the end of the first half, giving Alabama that field goal,
right.
A 52-yard field goal, which is a very long field goal for Alabama football. But if you're complaining about refs and you lose by 17, there's more than just refs.
Yeah. Stetson Bennett, 18 of 40, by the way. He had three interceptions. Mm-hmm. One was kind of a fluke off of a tip early on. Like 52 seconds or something into the game. But you're right, he was on the run a lot. I don't want to say he was inaccurate, he just wasn't accurate enough. There were a lot of throws that were very close to being perfect, but were just a little bit out of reach or had a little too much mustard on them. So like you said, he's a good story, and I still think ultimately a pretty good quarterback, but this was part of the trepidation. For me,
it just depends what your bar is, Ty.
It depends what your bar is.
Pretty good quarterbacking enough? I don't think for Georgia it is.
Well, not if you want to beat Alabama.
Correct.
Not if you want to beat Alabama. So your final score here again, 41-24. Bama gets the W. They're on the road next week against Tennessee. Their remaining schedule features Mississippi State, road tilt against LSU. They've got Kentucky, they've got Auburn, they've got Arkansas as well. Georgia on the road at Kentucky for their next game before they square off against the Florida Gators.
Yes.
Let's stay in the SEC and talk about this South Carolina-Auburn game, Dan.
By the way, did you see how Nick Saban got back into the stadium? Like how he was able to coach after not being... I know you mentioned the negative tests. The SEC just instituted that protocol after a Texas A&M soccer player had a false positive and tested negative 3 days in a row, 24 hours apart, each of those tests. Nick Saban had to get a test driven up to Mobile, 3.5 hours away at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning for the third test in a sort of file it under must be nice to be Nick Saban and right. A you know, very important person in your state category. But that's what was needed. It was only, I think, only 9 days old, the protocol within the SEC, the false positive protocol. So, wow.
I imagine that kind of like the presidential motorcade taking
that
test.
Of course.
Up north. Why didn't they fly it?
Risky. I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Nick was there. They win the game 41-24. All right. South Carolina, Auburn, the Gamecocks were my Yakko's home dog of the week. Not a sponsor.
Both liked them, yeah.
Both liked them. It dawned on me that after watching a couple quarters of this game, Dan, if you're Will Muschamp, if you're anybody playing Auburn, you could craft an entire game plan just around Bo Nix screwing up, couldn't you?
Oh, man.
You could. If you really wanted, you could do that.
I don't think you can count on that because there's still a good version of Bo Nix.
You can't. Okay,
just
fair.
Ether early.
Fair. You can't expect it. You can't count on it.
Right.
You can at least have a manila envelope at the ready in case Bo Nix decides he's going to throw three picks.
Yeah.
You can have that if the situation presents itself. In this case, it absolutely did, by the way. Carolina beats Auburn. It's the first victory over Auburn since 1993. They've only played 8 times since then. So this isn't like a longstanding rivalry of any sorts, but the Bo Nix turnovers all led to South Carolina touchdowns.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how frustrating it must be if you're an Auburn fan right now. This is kind of like an evergreen comment.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, you can say that after an Iron Bowl win.
I get it. But it's got to be so frustrating because in watching the first half, Auburn pretty much outplayed South Carolina in that first half. And the turnovers killed them. As the game wore on, then the defense started wearing down and it was pretty much over. And credit to South Carolina for playing their game. They just let Auburn trip over themselves and, you know, allowed them to commit the turnovers and the penalties. And then they just capitalized on what they could. But, you know, while it's a great win for South Carolina, we could talk through some of that, I'm sure. I'm really left with this feeling of disappointment on the Auburn side. Like, this was supposed to be a team that was a hell of a lot better than what we've seen so far, especially bringing Chad Morrison. You've got Gus Malzahn. It's like this mind meld of two offensive geniuses. And one thing that we've seen now, I think, over the last few seasons at Auburn, it's that innovation isn't there. It doesn't seem like the quarterback development's there. And it's got to be damn frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, this is why we have Gus Malzahn conversations every year, because they will look like this, and then they'll beat Alabama, or they'll beat LSU, or somebody impressive that specific year. And I don't know if it's a Bo Nix thing fully, because the offensive line needs a lot of work. I don't think defensively, talent-wise, they're the same up front as where they were these last 2, 3, 4 years under Kevin Steele. I know they're beat up in the back end, but I don't know. How many times a game do you see Bo Nix take a snap, take a drop, step into a throw, and connect for 14 yards? I don't know. There's a lot of check down. There's a lot of yards after the catch on those shorter screen type looks. Auburn's offense is in a funk. It's in a full-on funk. They have good receivers. You saw the frustration boil over on the sidelines with Seth Williams and Bo Nix. And I don't know how Auburn fully digs themselves out of this. I don't know what that looks like. But they do have talent around Bo Nix, and they can make adjustments. There are moments, you know, where Bo Nix looks like he is what he should be when they're down and they're scrambling to come back. When he's just sort of improvising, he looks really impressive. When he needs to sort of diagnose defense and find the creases in the zone, that's when you're like, what? I don't know where this is going. I don't know where this Auburn experiment offensively is going. So
yeah,
South Carolina, we're spending a lot more time on Auburn, but South Carolina ran the ball well enough. They made plays. They took advantage of mistakes. I mean, J.C. Horn.
Yeah.
You talk about a corner.
Yeah.
Just his instincts, his ability with the ball in his hands. This is why he is, I assume, some sort of first round-ish pick prospect. J.C. Horn is a spectacular. I think both corners for South Carolina are very good, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that he is a genuine national playmaker at cornerback.
Oh, so, for sure.
South Carolina did what decent teams do, which is take advantage of mistakes and capitalize. So good for South Carolina. They're now, what, 2-2?
2-2.
Yeah. Vandy and Auburn. Okay.
Good for them. Good for them. Yeah. Looked well. Looked well. Looked good in this game.
Looked well. They looked healthy. They had a glow about
They did. They did.
Yeah.
They looked good. Okay. They played well. They get the W at home. Tank Bigsby is still the bright spot for Auburn. Maybe the only bright spot.
Love Tank. Yeah.
Had 111 yards on the ground. He's really kind of growing into that name now. So I'm excited to see his progression now as he gets more snaps. All right. Elsewhere in the SEC, Kentucky 34, Tennessee 7, Dan.
Just staying on that interception train. I guess we should in the SEC, right?
Wow. So historic win for the Cats. Congratulations. It's the first time they've won in Knoxville since 1984. They had previously lost 17 straight.
Mm-hmm.
So a cool win. For the recap, I'm going to turn it over to you, the president of the Jared Garantano fan club.
That's me. Correct.
As our honored guest, Dan, why don't you talk through a little bit what transpired here?
I am turning in my pin, my sash, my ID badge. And it's not even the fan club. It's the Tennessee's passing game is okay sometimes. That's the name of the club. Because I don't want to single him out because he's just a college kid. But.
He was dreadful in this game.
Tennessee is genuinely an average quarterback performance away from being interesting. Every week, an average quarterback performance, and that's just not fumbling, not throwing back-breaking interceptions away from being interesting. I'm not saying good, I'm not saying very good, from being interesting, from being, dare I say, Arkansas. Dare I say, because this is what, Kentucky, the first time they've won in Knoxville in decades. This is a Kentucky team who is happy to win with offensive line play and really strong defense, which can take you pretty far in the SEC, especially in 2020. Kentucky is not an electric offense. They're a good defense, but it's not like you need to outscore Kentucky in that traditional back and forth shootout-y way. You don't need to score 30 points to beat Kentucky, even though they scored 34 against Tennessee. You just need to not hand them bagfuls of Scrooge McDuck point coins. And that's the problem for Tennessee. To state the obvious is when you hand a team points and you don't seem to get better about learning how to not hand that team points over years and years, your ceiling is relatively low. You have a 6-foot ceiling. And that's Tennessee. And maybe Jared Garantano, because they brought in JT Shrouded. He threw a pick right away, and he clearly is not the answer. Maybe he is the best option in a room full of not encouraging options at the moment. I know they have some young, promising blue-chip quarterbacks, but yeah, Tennessee has that 6-foot ceiling. You're ducking a lot. And so Kentucky, what is it? Chris Rodriguez, see the back? Yeah, Chris Rodriguez had a good enough game. I know Tennessee ran the ball a little bit well in spots that were sort of inconsequential, but we're bearing the lead here in that it's Kentucky is that aggressively competent team that you yourself have to bring competence to the field or you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And that's what we had. Kentucky has good corners. They're well coached and they are at the very least a solid team, at the very best, pretty good.
Yeah. Garantano, by the way, had pick sixes on back-to-back drives. All told, his QBR per ESPN was 4.4, which if you don't know what that means, it's not good at all.
Yeah. If it's right around a 40 time,
that's
when you got to make that literal pivot to like running an option offense.
But look, the four Tennessee turnovers put Kentucky in an ideal spot. They didn't have to take any chances.
No.
They could give it to Christopher Rodriguez. Terry Wilson was 12 of 15 for 101 yards. He didn't have to do much, but look, just
he's not asked to.
He didn't have to, right? Aim for the fairway in the center of the green. They did a pretty good job here. Interestingly enough, though, final point on Kentucky's offense. This is from David Hale, who does a good job every Sunday morning recapping the action that was for ESPN.com. He says, while the Wildcats have won two straight blowouts, they've totaled just 451 yards of offense in the two games. Only two teams in the past decade have had two wins by 20 points or more without topping 300 yards of offense in either game in a full season. Kentucky's now done it in back-to-back weeks, to your point.
And Terry Wilson, as I think a caller on the Reverb said, has now beaten Florida and Tennessee on the road?
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
Not bad.
Great.
Right? All right.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Real quick, final two SEC games. We had A&M 28, Mississippi State 14. This is a good game for the Aggie defense. The Mike Leach offense, not so much, has sort of stalled out. KJ Costello was benched in the second half in favor of Will Rogers. Yeah. My only point here, I don't want to drone on too much about this game because we have a lot of other stuff to get to. This is not an easy win for A&M. You know, like Kellen Mond didn't really have a great day, 12 or 13 of 23 for 139.
Like I mentioned, he's better at home ahead of that Florida win. Like I mentioned.
Isaiah Spiller back over 100 to some extent. Ania Smith had a good game as well. So it wasn't like the points came easy here for A&M, but it was really just a testament to their defense holding down Mississippi State.
Yeah, it was only 7 points of offense for Mississippi State. They had that really impressive pick six, if that counts for anything, which I don't think it does. But yeah, you're right. A&M ran the ball well, and they looked a little bit off on offense. And I don't know if it's a Kellen Mond thing. I don't know if it's losing Caleb Chapman for the year thing, who sort of seemed like he was emerging as their go-to receiver. But yeah, I think the credit goes to a really nice game plan from Mike Elko and the defensive front for Texas A&M. Buddy Johnson, by the way, that might just be permanent dude status.
Buddy.
He is like, I just every Saturday, I'm like, yeah, Buddy Johnson finished with 3.5 tackles for a loss and 38 solo tackles. You know,
he's good.
The defense
he's really
is building
good.
The whole linebacking core out of him. So I love to see that. I love to see that sort of improvement because the Texas A&M defense at times last year, which might be putting it lightly, pretty rough. And so nice to see them take a step forward, though. This is probably more of an example of Mississippi State's offense being a complete wreck and Mississippi State being in the midst of, well, in the midst of a sort of like break it down to the studs and before building it back up, you know, tear it down. And I don't know if Mike Leach is a lost property brother and can get it done, but that's, we're looking, the demo phase is well underway.
It's that scene where they give everybody like the sledgehammer and they're sort of just like knocking stuff down. Yeah.
Yeah. Put on the goggles. It's all for show, obviously. But
sure.
Yeah. The demo phase is ongoing.
And the final tidbit here in the SEC before we move to the ACC, we had Arkansas 33, Ole Miss 21. On the Ole Miss side, we had Matt Corral with a rare unicorn performance of 6 interceptions in this game, Dan.
Yeah, that's many. That's many. That's why the caller mentioned he's the best quarterback Arkansas's had in quite some time. He was telegraphing.
The overwhelming reaction in our Patreon Discord channel was woof. Yeah. Woof when talking about this performance by Matt Corral, by the Ole Miss offense as a whole. It did seem like at the end of the third quarter and into the early part of the fourth that they might make a run, but it wasn't
right
in the cards. And look, on the Arkansas side, it's a really nice win. Did you see the ridiculous catch by Treylon Burks in the back of the end zone?
That's what I'm going as that catch for Halloween. It was so impressive.
It was incredible.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was actually, there were two, there were many good catches yesterday. I know what Thayer Thomas for NC State had an incredible like Tyree-like catch in the end zone after a tipped ball. But Treylon Burks, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, they're playing hard. You can make an easy case that they're potentially going to lose their next six games. But hey,
if they keep playing, hold on. There's some hogs in this house.
Pause. If they keep playing like this, could they beat Tennessee or Missouri or LSU?
Yeah, of course. America's team, Arkansas? Woo pig? Come on, Ty.
I'm just saying. You can look at the schedule and you can say, oh, they're going to lose to those teams. And maybe
at
they
A&M.
Should.
Is A&M flawed?
Oh, my
I
God.
I would say so. Is Tennessee flawed?
Oh, yeah.
I would say so. Is LSU flawed?
LSU is a bit flawed.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Mizzou? Probably, yeah. Flawed, not perfect, improving. I like the quarterback, but they got issues. So is Arkansas that team that you had to bring competence to the table to beat? Should have beaten Auburn.
They are playing hard. They are undeniably better than a year ago. And Sam Pittman, maybe not the biggest of big hires out there, but
sure.
Thus far, I think if you're an Arkansas fan, you got to be thrilled with what you've gotten. It's really been impressive.
Arkansas players seem to give a pit. They give a pit. It's hard to quantify caring, and there looks like there is so much more caring on the offense and defense and the effort and the communication and paying Barry Odom and Kendall Briles. Turns out really strong coordinators who connect with players, especially Barry Odom, whose credentials as a defensive coordinator are almost unimpeachable. I mean, it clearly was not a talent thing in the way that we were told sometimes regarding the Chad Morris era, because Arkansas players are getting it done, especially those transfers. I mean, Bumper Pool, I don't think played yesterday on defense, the Oklahoma transfer, but Felipe Frank certainly has been every bit of what Arkansas has needed for stability at quarterback.
So, for sure. Okay.
Really cool to see them fill in the blanks. I assume this is going to resonate on the recruiting trail.
So I'm glad that you mentioned the not being able to quantify caring.
Yeah.
Because that's actually a good segue over into
Notre Dame football.
No. That's a good segue over into Florida State, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
I give Florida State a lot of credit because there have been at least 6 points over the last 3 years, however long, it feels like forever, where the whole thing felt like it was collapsing on itself and the on-field product was essentially a self-fulfilling prophecy. This Florida State team now, I don't know if it continues, but what we saw this past week and even what we saw to some extent the week prior, playing with a lot more fight. We know that that's an aspect that's been missing over the last few years.
Are they a planetesimal to you?
I don't know what that means.
After this week?
I have no idea.
A planetesimal?
I don't know.
UFO show?
No, pluck? They're not. I'm not ready to say that there's pluck there yet. I would need to see a little bit more pluck. But there was just an intensity here that I hope can be the start of some momentum for the Noles, because they are long overdue for this. They win a huge game here at home over number 5, North Carolina, by a 31-28 score. It is a little weird to see Mike Norvell getting a Gatorade shower after beating North Carolina, I will admit. But let's just, you know,
baby steps.
Let's shrug that off. And
should it have been the powder as like a first? Should they have just doused him in Gatorade powder as like incrementally we'll get up to liquid?
Like the biggest antiquing in the world. Yeah.
Correct. Lime powder. Congrats on your holding on against North Carolina.
So, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. I get it's a big moment. I'll say this. The move to Jordan Travis has paid off. We're not going to act like he's John Elway out there as a passer. All right. But
right.
His legs do add.
Good modern reference.
Thank you, Dan. But, you know, like his legs add a dimension to that offense that I think Mike
for sure.
Norvell has utilized really well. He had over 100 yards of the ground, 2 touchdowns. The offense as a whole really killed North Carolina in the first half. They were averaging around 10 yards a play. They led by 24 at half. Second half, we don't got to talk about the second half as much.
Yeah.
They did start to give it away. I really thought they were going to give it away because North Carolina came roaring back. Carolina didn't win. It was fun to watch Sam Howell in that situation where he's just heaving it every play. Every ball is like 40 yards in the air. If not for a couple really bad drops on the bad possession or in the last possession, excuse me, there's a good chance North Carolina comes back and wins this game. But
I'd say so.
I want to keep it with Florida State because I feel really good for them getting this big win. They deserve it.
You mentioned wondering if the momentum continues for Florida State. It didn't continue in the second half. Like the momentum ended at halftime, to be clear, which is fine because the first step to playing well after not being impressive for 4 quarters against decent teams is to play well for a quarter and a half. That's why I'm okay with the Gatorade powder on Mike Norvell. Because you did it. You played an amazing second quarter, a strong first quarter, and you held on. You know, you were fingertips as the tropical storm was, you know, in your doorway, but you held on.
You held on.
And that counts for something. North Carolina, I thought, just looked completely out of it early. They thought they were going to walk over Florida State. Certainly not the case. I loved the interception. It was Josh Kando, I believe.
Yep.
I love those, like, giant dudes, I think he's an edge rusher, picking off a screen pass where the quarterback just assumes nobody's going to be in that lane and ran it back. I love that play. So Florida State only scored 24, if my math is correct, offensive points. But even still, win your clunkers because the second half offensively was a clunker. I'm also fascinated with when a team starts a quarterback and for whatever reason, because of performance, because of injury, and yes, the backup is better than the starter. Not because it's unusual because we've seen it happen all over the place, but because generally the coaching staff has seen a lot of the backup and has determined, well, this is not what we need for what we want to do.
Right.
And I had heard stories about that with Khalil Tate at Arizona, where there's like, yeah, he's talented, but he doesn't do anything in practice. And then he got in the game. I forget who the starter was. This is so long ago now. Was it the guy that took him to the Fiesta Bowl, I think, and then transferred to Baylor? I can picture him. Ty, short first name that starts with an A, I believe.
Oh, Anu Solomon.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was him or no, it was after him. It was another skinny dude. Maybe starts with a K. I'm really good with first letters after that, who then transferred to Indiana. Man, Arizona's had a time at quarterback. Anyway, we see this all over the place. Max Brown started against Alabama because USC didn't want to throw, what's his name, Sam? I'm really good with my names today, Ty. The Jets quarterback, Sam Darnold, to the Wolves against Alabama as a redshirt freshman.
Right.
But we see it time and time again. We're like, you know, Connor Bazelak at Mizzou. We're like, why wasn't this guy ahead of Sean Robinson? No? Okay. And so, fascinated by the fact that Jordan Travis is a playmaker. They are letting him run. It takes pressure off the offensive line that, you know, defenses are accounting for Jordan Travis in that kind of way. I was impressed by the Florida State receivers coming down with impressive balls. That sounded weird when I said that out loud, but I'm encouraged. There was an electricity to Florida State on offense that has been sorely missing, and go from 1.8 really impressive offensive quarters to 2.8, and we got something.
Let's go to 0.0 impressive offensive quarters and talk about Notre Dame 12, Louisville 7, Dan.
I'm so happy we're doing this now. Continue.
You want to talk about winning your clunkers.
We should come up with a sound at this point, a win your clunker sound.
Just
ask our pal Marcelo to do it for us.
If Marcelo wants to do a clunker sound, we would emphatically welcome that into our lexicon of sounds here.
Yeah.
This was your lock.
The crock potting sound, right?
Yeah. We had a couple folks submit crock potting. Oh, I try to rotate between the two.
Nice.
But this was your lock. I told you were going to jinx the whole damn thing.
This was a bad TV show. I only watched a little bit of it, but the floor is yours.
This is the worst TV show.
Yeah.
The bright spot here was the Notre Dame defense and the Louisville defense, for that matter.
Louisville.
This is still a potent Louisville offense. They weren't able to do much. Malik Cunningham had 118 yards. Javian Hawkins was fine. He didn't cut him up too badly. Clark Lee, I think, did a really good job game planning for this one. It's good that he did, because the offense didn't give him a whole lot of wiggle room. But it was important that the defense was there and showed up in the manner that it did for Notre Dame. And also credit to Louisville. Look, they pretty much took the entire passing game away. I'm not going to act like it's John Elway out there, but
good early 80s ref.
You know, they did a good job. They've been much maligned here in the early going, and they certainly came to play. I'll also add that.
Okay, I was waiting. Yeah.
Continue. On the Notre Dame side, I am encouraged by somewhat the commitment to the running game. You know, they ran the ball effectively late in the game when they had a run clock to escape, and Kyron Williams looked good, and Ian Book actually helped them a lot on the ground. So it was good that they kind of steered into that, just kind of knowing situationally what they were in this game. They weren't was any kind of passing entity whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I have been super critical of Ian Book, your boy Ian Chapter, over the last couple seasons.
I'm very mean and stupid. Continue. It's
not fair to put it all on him, all right? Mm-hmm. Because I am still not sure who his weapons are. There's an issue, I think, of guys just not getting open.
Do you think Ian Book is like, I could swear Chase Claypool was on this team. I swear.
He would give like his left arm to have Chase Claypool back on this team. Like,
yeah.
If there's an issue with guys not getting open, if that's going to be the case, then your only option is to run. And figure out a way to just maximize that. Go full Wisconsin. Just run the crap out of the ball as your main game plan. And if like Jared Aberderis shows
Wisconsin up. Wisconsin completes passes downfield. That's kind.
But if like Jared Aberderis shows up and he's like suddenly can get open for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Great.
A little Nick Toon action.
Nick Toon. Yeah. Just get like the random wideout that shows up and starts giving you production and feed them the ball.
A-Cephas. Yeah.
Notre Dame is accepting applications for that role right now, if you're interested. But I just don't know who their weapons are. And I have a hard time getting behind guys like Kevin Austin, who everyone's excited about, but still only had one catch in the game.
Yeah.
You know, there's potential, sure. But without that component of the offense giving any of us a little bit more confidence headed into a big game against Clemson,
yeah,
you got to be kidding me. Like, there's no chance against Clemson if this is the offense that they're going to have. That's fine, because we're going to talk about what Clemson did to Georgia Tech and what they do to most teams. And it's fine to get drilled by Clemson, but if that is the measuring stick of this
Brian
Kelly...
It's probably not that fine.
Well, but it's understandable.
Yeah, sure.
If Clemson is now the new measuring stick for Notre Dame football, and if this is the offense that they're going to trot out there when Clemson comes to town, forget it. You know, I'll go Clemson minus anything. Clemson's not going to lose that game.
This is not a live show that we're doing right now. We're not in front of people. We're not, you know, people are not listening to us speak live, but I'm picturing the Tokyo Dome. Dan, you were right about Ian Book. Dan, we love you. I'm not going to pile on, because it was obvious to everybody who watched this game. Louisville's defense has been dreadful. Win your clunkers, as I always, you know, like it doesn't make it any different for Notre Dame, even though I'm just always right about Notre Dame, Ty.
No, right. Yeah, that's why you went Notre Dame minus 17.5 here, right?
Well, I really thought Louisville's defense, I thought Notre Dame, even Notre Dame was impervious to a clunker performance against Louisville defense, and I was wrong. So no, I'm not always right about Notre Dame. The thing I worry about with Notre Dame, because you can play down, you cannot get excited for Louisville, and maybe you play up for your bigger opponents, as Notre Dame sometimes does. The transitive property tie is not worthwhile as an indicator of future results. But if you will indulge a little bit of transitive noodling from me.
Go for it. Go for it.
Georgia Tech scored 46 points against the Louisville Cardinal in a 19-point win, if my math is correct.
I have this same note, by the way, on my sheet. Continue.
Okay.
I love the transitive property. I don't care
Let's move on, because the transitive property is if A is greater than B and B is greater than C, A is greater than C, kind of thing. I believe if I'm looking at the ESPN scoreboard correctly, Clemson went on a 66-0 run in a 73-7 win over Georgia Tech, the very team that scored 46 against Louisville.
That is factually correct.
Is my transitive noodling on the level?
Do you just want to go over to the Clemson game, or do you want to stick with some of the Notre Dame piling on before we do that?
No. Notre Dame won their clunker. That's fine. They're undefeated. Okay. Everybody has a down week, and you know, you have it against a defense that has been pretty susceptible. It happens. It happens to everybody, right?
Sure.
We can look back in the archives and find like a 13-12 Alabama win over Arkansas within the last decade. I think it was 13-12. But I love a good transitive noodle, Ty. And this is a tight noodle here. This is a hand-rolled, tight transitive noodle between Notre Dame. If we're looking forward to Notre Dame-Clemson as the game of the ACC season.
Yeah, I know.
I'm curious.
Curious. Well, so Clemson won 73-7. The highlight of this game might have been the fan in the stands with the Georgia Tech regalia just laying down, falling asleep. Do you see that guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did.
I don't.
By the way, was there a butt? Was there an offensive line butt in the Notre Dame game? I believe there was. I believe somebody got unintentionally pantsed on the Notre Dame offensive line.
I did not see that, but I'll take
the word
for it.
Is there a Tommy? Is there a Liam? Are there both a Tommy and a Liam?
I believe they're both, yeah.
Okay. It was one of them. Okay, continue.
I just don't know what I'm supposed to say about the Clemson game. Trevor Lawrence threw his first pick in like the last calendar year. One of those cool fadeaway jobs, like Rex Grossman style, where he just kind
of course
gives it the old heave-ho as he's falling backwards. But this was complete and total destruction. They outgained Tech 671-204. What I found most intriguing about this game is that for Clemson, four different guys played quarterback, 10 different guys logged a rushing attempt, and 17 guys logged receptions, including Dabo Swinney's kid, who looks exactly like him. I sent you a picture this morning.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Ira Swinney. This doesn't fully feel like one of the, or didn't fully feel like one of those weeks where Clemson comes out and doesn't look all that strong. Maybe they're not taking their opponent seriously, whether it was a North Carolina last year, an NC State or a Pitt or any of those games, or Georgia Tech way back when, just because it was a game hard to get up for on the road in that noon Eastern time slot where maybe, remember, what was it last year? I think where Clemson was close against Louisville for a little bit. After a couple of Trevor Lawrence picks, and then right. He was sensational after that the rest of the year. It had that air of earthquake weather to me, but then it was just a murder machine. Then it was just pain. And no. Georgia Tech improving, but not anywhere near a competitive level to Clemson. So, yeah. And I think, did Clemson put in like their punter as a quarterback in the fourth quarter? Did 10 different dudes have carries for Clemson? Yes. I like the emptying the roster element of Clemson blowouts. I can respect that.
I can too. All right.
Yeah.
Quickly through some of the other ACC action, we had Miami 31, Pitt 19. This line actually went up to 12.5 before kickoff. And I think when we did our preview, it was 10.5. It went up to 12.5. Nice bounce back win here for Miami, particularly the red zone defense came to play. Pitt got down in the red zone 5 times. They only scored 1 touchdown. They ran 10 plays in the red zone for a total of -2 yards. Beyond that, the other big aspect of this game in terms of what differentiated the two teams, big plays. 3 of Miami's 4 touchdowns came on plays that were 35 yards or longer. Otherwise, the rest of this thing was actually pretty dead even. It was pretty close statistically. Joey Yellen started in place of the injured Kenny Pickett. He looked decent. Neither team had a lot going on the ground, though Miami had more success because of Derek King and his scrambling abilities. But save for really those two factors, the red zone defense for Miami and some of the big plays that worked to the advantage of the Canes, this felt like a pretty good matchup between these two teams. It was even, if not for the score.
I think you're right. I mean, it's hard to expect Pitt to look amazing with their backup quarterback, the Arizona State transfer and Yellen. But Pitt's offense, especially in the red zone.
Not good.
Ugh.
Not good.
I was trying to come up with a word, and the only word I came up with was uncomfortable for me to say, even for me, for when teams have that red zone problem where they're good between the 20s and then, or between the, whatever, they're good towards the middle of the field. And then when it, the field gets tighter, when play calling becomes that much more important, when execution becomes that much more important, they're settling for threes instead of sixes. They have a three problem. And I put those two words together for a throblem, and I'm not thrilled with it.
I thought you were going to say red zone constipation, which is also another way you could go with it. But
yeah, throblem is more efficient.
Yeah,
I don't want it to catch on. It makes me feel so gross. I don't want throblem to catch on. And I now demand everybody tweet it. Like problem, but instead of starting with a P, it's a T-H-R. Yeah, T-H, throblem. They have a three problem.
This is going to be a throblem, isn't it? This is going to come back to haunt us. I like
and
that.
And so I'll go more positive with Pitt because I think Jordan Addison has been a revelation, shorter receiver, but looked completely unguardable. And this is a Miami defense that can stop people on offense. They've got two great ends. They can get after a quarterback. Their corners are improving every week. And Miami's own offense, I still have concerns about. The, you know, beating an opponent comfortably, especially one like Pitt, who's talented enough, is impressive. But as we saw against Clemson, which is an outlier of an example.
Sure.
But if Miami needs to go downfield, I don't know, and this is in the same topic as Notre Dame, not having those answers at wide receiver downfield, but I don't see that with Miami. I think as fun as De'Aaron King is, they couldn't really run the ball against Pitt, and so there's still some ice on this offensive windshield that needs to be scraped off. I don't think Miami's anywhere close to where they need to be to fully become not an ACC championship contender, but a problem themselves. And so Miami's good at times and at certain things, but offensively, I think they have a ways to go still. But look, you win comfortably against a decent team. That's great. Survive in advance. They have a lot to like.
Virginia Tech 40, Boston College 14. Big boy game here for Hendon Hooker. 11 of 15 passing and a touchdown through the air. 18 for 164 and three touchdowns on the ground. Combine that with our boy Khalil Herbert, who had another 143 on the ground.
Our boy, yeah.
Yeah, and Tech just had way too much for Boston College and the Jerky Boys. Now that Hendon Hooker is back, watch out for Tech. This is going to be the thing that I hitch my wagon to. Watch out for Tech. I'm paying attention to their games, not just the games, but mostly the point spreads.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is value to be had here. I think Tech is a good team. It obviously took them a while to work through the whole COVID thing and then Braxton Burmeister. And if we can get Hendon Hooker out there now with some degree of consistency, that makes them a really formidable opponent. So it was good to see them perform in the manner that they did here against Boston College. I think I took Boston College plus the points. That was a dumb pick.
Yeah, you were enamored.
Yeah. That was a dumb pick, but
yeah, that's okay. I don't know how you predict five turnovers, Ty. I don't know how you predict that, you know.
It happens.
Because this was a game in the third quarter, right? It was a 17-14 game that got completely out of control.
Yeah.
So it's not like Virginia Tech fully outclassed Boston College, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. BC couldn't do anything. This was a relatively close game. It just got opened up by turnovers and really Hendon Hooker and Khalil Herbert making plays. I think Raheem Blackshear also had a nice run near the end.
He did.
Hendon Hooker is so much better than everything else that Virginia Tech has had at quarterback these past 2-3 years.
It's not even close.
He is legitimately, and I have no problem with this word like I do for throblem.
Throblem.
But I kept coming back to Hendon Hooker is chunky. Everything he does results in chunks. And that's what you need in a quarterback if you have high bar aspirations. And this game happened to be Hendon Hooker on the ground as particularly chunky. But Virginia Tech can run the ball really well. Defensively, I don't think a ton needs to be done to stop Boston College for four quarters. But Boston College can, you know, Phil Jurkovec, the best of Phil Jurkovec, can improvise, can go downfield. He can win games in the ACC. But Virginia Tech to me is the story, because when this offense gets rolling, especially when they have short fields and the ability to capitalize on your mistakes as an opponent, they're pretty scary. They're pretty scary. They have a bit to go in terms of consistency, but with a healthy Hendon Hooker, I am curious about Virginia Tech's ceiling in a way that I don't think I was pre-Hooker.
pre-hook. Got it.
Pre-hooker. Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask you a really goofy question about Phil Djurkovic, my boy.
I'm ready.
Where does Phil Djurkovic rank relative to other ACC quarterbacks at this point?
Okay. You're going to have to give me an either or right now.
He's not above Trevor Lawrence. We know that.
Yeah.
We're not going to put him in front of De'Eriq King or Sam Howell.
Right.
Probably not in front of Hendon Hooker either. Is he, no. Would you put him above Ian Book?
That's the interesting question, right? As a Notre Dame transfer.
Right.
Probably not.
I wouldn't either.
Probably not, because Ian Book has performed in bigger games, has come away with wins in bigger games, and it's all relative to Notre Dame's schedule, but I haven't, Ian Book has led Notre Dame, or has been part of leading Notre Dame to the playoff, whereas Phil Djurkovic is interesting. He's feisty, but he's still not proven enough to put him above Ian Book.
I guess my point here is, whenever you get a transfer, it's kind of a coin flip whether or not it's going to work out.
Right.
And it's such a boon for Jeff Hafley in year one to have mm-hmm. a quarterback who, like, you could legit make a case that he's kind of in, there's 15 teams in the ACC. You could probably make a case that he's in like the 8-10 range if you really wanted to.
He's completing 60% of his passes. He's fourth in the ACC in rating, and I think in the top five in yards per attempt. He's number six in yards per attempt. I would put him behind Lawrence, behind Howell, behind Book, but this year definitely ahead of Malik Cunningham, ahead of Kenny Pickett. Even though Pickett's had an improved year, I would put him ahead of Chase Bryce, ahead of Tommy DeVito, who's out for the year. I think he's probably like in that six range.
Yeah. Okay. What else do we have here in the ACC to close it out? We had NC State over Duke. They're now 4-1. Devin Leary had to be carted off.
That sucked. I saw that.
Yeah, he scrambled and he got lit up both by a targeting foul, and he also twisted his left ankle. They had to cart him off there. They had an air cast on. It's hard to see him coming back in time for their game against North Carolina.
So I don't think he's going back for a long time.
That was a real bummer to see that. Elsewhere in the ACC, we had Wake over Virginia. Virginia was, of course, without Brennan Armstrong, their own quarterback, who was out, I think, with a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Liberty, 38-21 over Syracuse, Dan.
Yeah, Syracuse is tough. It's going to be a long year. Thankfully, it's a short year, I guess. NC State had that incredible... I mentioned it earlier. I think it was Thayer Thomas. It was a Duke defender, tips it in the end zone, and Thayer Thomas grabs it. I'm doing this on video for the Patreon subscribers. Holds it up against his helmet in a David Tyree moment, an incredible catch in a split second's time. So that was fun to see. Good for NC State for coming out of that with a win, even with the terrible news about Devin Leary.
Yeah,
we assume, unfortunately. Virginia, the wild Keaton Thompson package. a wild Keaton Thompson appears. They ran the ball relatively well. The problem for Virginia is they couldn't throw it and they couldn't really defend Wake Forest. Sam Hartman had a really nice game. This was close until the relative end, and Wake pulled away because of, I think it's Kenny Walker and what he was able to do on the ground. So really nice win for Wake. Another one of those teams where you at least have to be competent if you're going to beat Wake, especially in Winston-Salem. So
cool to see
the sort of middle tier of the ACC looking as roughshod and crazy and unpredictable as ever.
The Big 12 only had one game. It was West Virginia by 21 over Kansas. Good game for Jared Deggy and Letty Brown.
Yep.
The Oklahoma State Baylor game was postponed, which we discussed previously. So more to come certainly on the Big 12 front as we move forward, but only one quick game there. The other games that were postponed this week were Cincinnati and Tulsa, Southern Miss and UTEP, and FIU and Charlotte. Just a few quick group of five games that I do need to mention here before we round out this show.
Dude, I want to take some time on this group of five thing.
Well, we
this
can
was
do
an
that.
Amazing group of five week.
Memphis 50, UCF 49. This was not a game that you watch if you're into defense. Like, if you like man ball, you don't watch this game. This was all offense. This was 601 yards and 5 touchdowns for Dylan Gabriel for UCF. This was 486 yards and 6 touchdowns for Brady White. Nary an interception between the two. A lot of points. A great comeback for Memphis. They were down 21 midway through the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very odd, well, not odd, but predictable circumstance of UCF having the extra point blocked earlier in the game, which you see that happen. You always say,
that's going to come around.
That's
going to
come back
them.
To haunt them, right?
Yeah.
Yep. It sets off a chain reaction. Both teams going for two, some makes, some non-makes later in the game.
Non-makes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's Memphis good. Ends up winning by 50-49, Dan.
If you'll indulge me, Ty.
Please.
Because I don't always want to go negative with the Dvorak, Ty. Sometimes you just have to appreciate a giant drive chart.
Do it.
And I was considering Georgia Southern, Arkansas State, but this was just wild because of what Dylan Gabriel and Brady White were both able to do in a losing and winning effort. But
fumble, touchdown, touchdown, downs, punt, touchdown, punt, downs, touchdown, end of half, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, punt, touchdown, punt, touchdown, missed field goal, end of game.
Did you break down into like a little bit of a Greg McElroy impression there? Was that your McElroy voice?
I'm playing with different levels, Ty. Okay. There was some McElroy
seasoning.
There was
like 30% McElroy seasoning on that.
30%?
Yeah.
I thought I was just a dusting there. Okay.
No. All right. Well, fun game.
No doubt about it.
A lot of offense. What else do we have here in Group of Five land? We have Coastal Carolina at 4-0.
Yeah. Hell yeah, we do.
They played on Wednesday, knocked off Louisiana. You've been preaching at the altar of Grayson McCall.
I'm trying here, Ty. Don't just apply for an internship at Grayson McCall without being the top 5% of your class. People know this.
He's a freshman. He's got a 14-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Mm-hmm. And he's got Coastal Carolina, I think, in the driver's seat now to win the Sun Belt after a really good start.
And their coach started TD Bank. It's wild. It's great. So they beat Louisiana. Georgia State, I mentioned, loses to Arkansas State in another wild. I think the score was at 28 all at halftime. That's when you know.
Yeah.
That's when you know. Clear my schedule, Joanne. I've got a second half to watch. BYU came back. They had not a great, I think, second and third quarter, but Zach Wilson, buddy, is really good. Really good. So they come back against Houston on the road. I think they ended up winning by like 17. There was SMU Tulane was close without Reggie Roberson. Receivers were stepping up all over the place for SMU in that hold on win. And it was overtime, right?
Yep.
It was overtime.
Back and forth.
Marshall. Marshall's undefeated, Ty. Nice road win against Louisiana Tech. Grant Wells, a planetesimal to me. Really nice quarterback. There were a couple other things I wanted to hit, and I'm loading up my scoreboard to remind myself as we speak. Oh, Navy held on against ECU. Holt Naylors, who I really like, he may have had a false positive situation as well. I don't know if you saw that. He tested positive somewhat close to the game, but couldn't get additional tests, even though everybody in his orbit, UFO reference, tested negative. And there was some, you know, I think a justifiable anger there.
Yeah.
Georgia Southern is now 3-1, undefeated in conference, though it was UMass, so that's sort of an independent win. North Texas won a game. North Texas just drilled Middle Tennessee, a ton of offense there. I scrubbed through that one actually pretty quickly. But yeah, Marshall was the one that stood out to me just because they're undefeated. Troy's having a really nice year. They have a tight win against Eastern Kentucky, despite a valiant comeback effort from EKU. And I think that's it.
Okay.
UAB over Western Kentucky. I lied. Army had a nice win against UTSA, who I think is feisty, and that was Army on the road. You mentioned Liberty. Anthony Russo is still at Temple?
Yeah. Yeah, he's still there.
I feel like you went to middle school with at least three Anthony Russos. Tony R., Anthony R. That is ultimately it. Ty, what are we doing now? What should people know? What should people be listening to on Saturdays, perhaps, or Sunday mornings, perhaps? I need an information dump from you.
An information dump. Thank you. Yeah. Well, what we're going to do after we hit the stop button here for our Patreon subscribers is our brew and day. So we're going to keep the cameras rolling. We're going to keep the audio rolling. And if you go on out to verballers.com and sign up, you can get access to that extended content, which I'm excited about. We've been doing the brew and a. We don't have the solid verbal mugs yet that we can display, but those are going to be forthcoming, I think, over the next week or so. something like that. We should be getting those told. Soon. We should be getting those soon. Head on out.
I believe they're diner mugs too, like the real thick, like they're nice. Old school diner. They keep your hot drink especially hot. I like that.
You want to go out to verballers.com for more information on that and many other things that we're doing here. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you're just, you know, finding us for the first time. If you enjoy college football as much as we do, you can go on out to solidverbal.com and find a link there to all the different subscription options that you have. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We try to send the newsletter out once a week. We don't spam you. We just try to keep you in tune with what we're doing and some of the fun stuff that we're reading and enjoying outside of the college football sphere. The only other thing that I would mention is that if you are, again, a huge fan of college football the way we are, do check out the College Football Rewind. It's from our friends over at Learfield IMG College. They recap the entire weekend in the span of an hour. They do the same thing that they do on the Blitz that we talked about on Wednesday, but they take local radio feeds and they kind of mesh it together to give you the flavor for what transpired in a given college football week. Everybody on the top 25 scoreboard is represented. They give you the notable standout performances, the whole nine yards. Search College Football Now, wherever you can find your podcast. That is available Sunday mornings through the regular season, Dan.
I can almost guarantee with 99.999% certainty that they will not use the term throbblem.
No, probably
on the
not.
College Football Rewind. So there's already a selling point that we can't offer. We just can't.
I think that's right, Dan. Okay, so that is all I have. I appreciate everybody stopping by, downloading the show, subscribing, giving us your undying support. It is so just very gratifying.
It's incredible.
We can't appreciate it enough. What we're going to do now is we're going to hit the stop button and we're going to do our Bruin A, okay?
I think people are just going to have the show stopped for them. I'm not touching anything, Ty. I'm rolling straight through. And if you are not cool enough to sign up at verballers.com, that's on you, I guess. I don't know.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, we'll catch you all pretty soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.